Talk Cheese.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here with my guest host, William Fink, in our ongoing series on the Book of Romans. And this is part 10. And last time, according to my notes, we left off at Romans 11:27. And so what I'd like to do is quickly just recap, or actually just back up to verse 26. And then take a few more verses from Romans chapter 11 before we get into Romans chapter 12, because I want to stress that Paul is teaching that only Israel gets salvation. Of course, by Israel, we mean the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Caucasian people, the true Israelites of the world, not pseudo-Israel, not the Jewish people who have assumed our identity, who do not fit any of the marks of Israel, the prophetic marks indicated in the Bible, such as the fact that the Israelites will be a company of nations, they will have great armies, great navies, they will be a farming people, they will be builders, they will be builders of civilizations and cities. The Jews are none of these things, folks, absolutely none of them. And we'd be farmers. The Jews are not farmers, folks. I dare you, I challenge you to find a Jewish farmer anywhere in the world besides the pseudo-Israel state. And even there, it's only going to be a Jewish teenager.
Well, weren't most of the tax farmers Jewish?
Yes, the tax farmers are definitely Jewish. That's right. That's right. So I'm going to back up to verse 26 in Romans chapter 11. And so all Israel shall be saved, as it is written. And, of course, the Bible doesn't write anything about salvation for anybody else but Israel. Of course, the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Caucasian people and the rest of the white race from which Israel derives, there shall come out of Zion the Deliverer and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. It doesn't say it's going to turn it away from anybody else but Jacob. Verse 27, for this is my covenant to them, that's Jacob Israel, not to the world, when I shall take away their sins. And only Israel was given the law at Mount Sinai, and therefore we are the only ones that had that covenant. It's quite simple, folks. You cannot generalize these passages to the rest of the world. We're not supposed to try to save the souls of the other races. We're supposed to cover our own act.
Not the same soul anyway. What are they to be saved from?
That's right.
They didn't fall in the garden. They didn't partake in that. They weren't
right.
A part of that in the first place.
They were here already, and they're just coming along for the ride. Okay? Verse 28, as concerning the gospel, they are enemies for your sakes, but as touching the election, they are beloved for the Father's sakes. Now, this sounds to me like it's, of course, he's talking about our people, Israel, okay? That within our community, we have enemies for our sake that we are supposed to learn to love, honor, and respect, and, you know, even humble ourselves before our brethren who do evil toward us. And this was covered very well in the Sermon on the Mount, that, you know, we should not abandon our fellow citizens, our Anglo-Saxon Israelite citizens, but in the interest of the community and also for our own sakes, Paul is telling us here, for our own development spiritually, morally, and in terms of prosperity, etc., we are supposed to love our brethren even if they're doing wrong to us at the moment. Okay, we have to have the faith that they will be converted and stop doing those kinds of things, you know, as a result of our faith in them. Isn't that what we're being told here, Bill?
Right, and we also have to have the faith that once our brethren, even though they went the wrong way about getting it, once they get what they want, we'll still have what we need.
That's right. Yeah, because Yahweh will not abandon us. In fact, he will bless us if we do, if we go about our business in this manner, okay? It's because Yahshua Messiah sacrificed himself for us. We need to do likewise for those of our brethren. You know, like those in the, what do you call the white nationalist movement who don't want to hear anything about the Bible, who don't want to hear anything about Jesus Christ. You know, we don't get angry with them. We just tell them what's going on. We just tell them like it is, you know. And, you know, in a polite and, you know, respectful way as possible. And, you know, if we indulge ourselves by putting them down and calling them sinners and blah, 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 well, we're just going to drive them away, you know. So it's like, if you have a son, a wayward son, and he's, let's say he's a drug addict, and if you curse him and tell him he's evil and he's never going to shape up and he's no good and blah, 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 well, what are the chances he's going to come around, you know, with that attitude? You're just going to drive him further away. So you always have to hold out hope for these people and, keep praying for them and keep encouraging to come back into the fold. So that the next verse or the next phrase in this verse, but as touching the election, they are beloved for the Father's sake. And so in other words, since they're Israelites, they're still potential heirs. They're still part of the election, right?
Well, yes, and he's still making that same distinguishment that he's made in Romans chapter 9, in Romans chapter 10, in Romans chapter 11. The true Israelites in Judea are still the subject.
Right, right. Yeah, and so so he's only talking about Israelites here. It's very
clear. He's not talking about the Edomites.
Right, exactly.
He's not talking about the disbelieving Jews.
Yeah, because the Jews aren't the elect.
Right. He is only talking about those true Israelites in that he pointed out.
Yes.
His kinsmen according to the flesh in Romans 9, 1 through 4.
The Jews are the vessels of destruction. He doesn't give them any more credit than that. Okay?
And mainstream Christianity fails to recognize the distinction that there were true Judeans
right.
in Palestine at the time of Christ.
Yes.
And as Paul explains, and as Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 support,
yes.
there were Edomite Judeans, Canaanites at
yes.
the time of Christ. And mainstream Christianity, they can't make that distinguishment because they can't appear to make any, I mean, in their own dogma,
they can't
to make any racial distinction whatsoever.
Right.
They can't appear to make a racial distinction.
Right. Yeah. And certainly they can't criticize the Jews. Because they figure, well, they're God's chosen people. If I criticize the Jews, then God's wrath will come down on me.
well, right. But that's, they only believe that way through their own self-deceit. They deceive
right.
themselves
right.
and into thinking that.
Yeah, and we can see that the exact opposite is happening by supporting the Jews. America and the rest of the Christian world is going under.
Every time we bless the Jews, we fall a few notches down the ladder.
That's right. We keep making the same mistake all over again, and the Judeo-Christians simply don't see it. They can't understand what's going on. So verse 30, for as you in times past have not believed God, yet now have obtained mercy through their unbelief, even so have these also now be not believed, that through your mercy they may also obtain mercy. So in other words, Paul is saying that if we persist in holding out hope and treating our brethren with kindness and mercy and justice, that they will be saved.
Well, right, but there's more here being said than that.
Okay.
All right. First, verse 27 is a quote. Actually, I'll go back to verse 26, quotes Isaiah 59:20.
Okay.
Verse 27 quotes Isaiah 59:21.
Okay.
And this here is a direct allusion
right.
to Hosea. Okay, to Hosea chapter 1.
Okay.
And he's telling the Romans, you at one time were disobedient.
Yes.
So this is another proof of identity that the Romans are dispersed Israelites.
Yes.
Because only dispersed Israelites could ever have been called disobedient at one time.
Right, right. So there's all kinds of internal evidence in this epistle to the Romans that he's singling out the Roman experience as being the, wild olive tree or the wild olive branch?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Any other race of people, any non-Israelite race of people, could never be considered disobedient before hearing the law.
Right. That's right.
They never had the law.
Yeah. Nobody else but Israel had the law.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And this, it's not – what I'm trying to say is that identity is not supported by vague statements here and there
right.
in the Bible.
Yeah.
The identity
supported by everything.
is the fabric of the Bible.
That's right.
From
That's
front
absolutely
to
right.
back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so let me just quote one more verse here, verse 32, for God has concluded them I'm not sure what
therefore Yahweh has enclosed all in disobedience.
Okay.
And in other words, none of us have a claim to righteousness.
Right, okay. Okay.
That he may show mercy to all.
Yes.
To all Israel, of course.
Of course, all
and,
Israel.
And this is also an allusion to certain prophecies.
Yes.
And Paul is going to go on to quote Isaiah 40 and Jeremiah 23.
Yes. Yes. And so when, obviously, in verse 32, when he uses the word all, which is what in the Greek?
Well, it's actually the word, it means all of a whole,
okay.
Of a unit. In other words, the unit has to really be predefined.
Yes.
It doesn't mean every single
biped. It's not an open-ended inclusivity.
No, it's
yes.
All of a whole.
Yes.
And the whole has to be defined before you understand who the all is.
Right. Well, it's defined in verse 26, all
and
Israel.
That's right. And that's not just Greek. I mean, the lexicons make that clear. However, that's the normal conventions of any language.
Right. Right. Now, you can't just assume that the word all is going to be universally applicable. You have to read the context.
Well, Caesar went out and decreed that the whole world be taxed.
Yeah, right.
Well, define the whole. Well, okay, that's the world. So
yeah.
Now let's define the world.
Well, how much tax revenue did he bring back from South America?
Well, right. And that point can be
none,
can be
right.
Raised again and again throughout Scripture.
Yes.
If people don't get the context, they're going to
yes.
Twist the Scripture into lies.
Yes. And you have to have a historical perspective to appreciate this. You can't read Paul's epistles as if they were written yesterday.
Well, absolutely, but it's the same thing about any history book. You know, you could write a history about the United States of America from, say, its conception in 1781 or whenever the Articles of Confederation were,
yeah.
Until the Civil War, say.
Yeah.
And you could have all, everybody, every man, or all kinds of terms like that.
Yes.
All the local governments, whatever, in that history.
And they'll refer to white people.
And it would never refer to anybody in China.
That's right.
Ever.
Right.
Because America had absolutely no contact with China.
Right. Right.
Until we helped the British in the Opium Wars.
Exactly. Yeah. So
now.
So you cannot use the universal all, and the universal whosoever, and the universal every. You have to appreciate the context, who it's being written to, and who it's being written about.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Paul defines man in we've discussed this
yes.
Often the last couple of weeks. He defines the word man as being equivalent to the term Adam.
Yes.
In Romans chapter 5.
Yeah.
And Romans chapter 8. So how could we interpret it to mean anything but Adam?
That's right.
The word man, I'm sorry, it cannot mean anything but Adam.
That's right. That's right.
I have a I'm going to have to put it on my website. I have a Merriam-Webster's dictionary from the 70s.
Okay.
And I have a photograph of the title page of the dictionary and a photograph of the page under the definition for man.
Okay.
And there's like 7 or 8 definitions for the word man in this dictionary.
Yeah.
And the last one states capitalized white society.
Right.
And that's what it is.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, any use of the man towards any biped is a different use of the word man when you consider bipeds of the
right.
other races.
Yeah, and that's a very recent usage, too. Very
yes,
recent.
And
yes.
That's just an adult male. And,
yes.
And that's the civil liberties laws that force us to do that.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
I'm sorry, the civil rights laws.
Yes. Yes.
But they're not men.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So, guest 6, who does not think he came from Adam? I'm not sure exactly what the question is referring to, but certainly.
Well, obviously, we have somebody that's not familiar with
yeah.
Christian identity, but Adam was a white man.
Yes.
Adam was the first white man, well, the first white man specifically mentioned in the Bible.
Yes.
Adam was, it's clear that Adam was white from the language of the Hebrews, but also from the history of the race.
Yes.
And
yes.
And all of the people that descended from the Genesis 10 nations from Noah were white,
yes.
And that can be proven in history.
Yes.
And there's a paper on my website that goes pretty far in demonstrating that, and it's called The Race of Genesis 10, and it's at Christogenia.org.
Okay, very good. All right, so let's get into Romans chapter 12. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. So, in other words, he's he's telling us to you know, present ourselves as a sacrifice in a similar manner that Yahshua Messiah presented himself as a sacrifice for us. So,
well, what is a sacrifice?
Yes, okay.
A sacrifice is dead. Therefore, we are to be dead to the things of the world.
Yes.
Paul said at Romans 8:13, "For if in accordance with the flesh you live, you are about to die, but if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, that then you will live." And he's talking about all of the wicked things that men do: adultery, fornication, lying, murder, theft.
Right.
In Colossians 3:5, he says, "Therefore make us dead these members which are upon the earth: fornication, uncleanness, passions, evil desires, covetousness." And a lot of people don't quite understand the dead to sin or the dead with Christ concept that Paul teaches, but Peter teaches the very same thing which Paul did. If we read Peter 2:24, "Who himself carried your errors on his body upon the cross, that the errors being taken away, we should live in righteousness."
Right, right.
And Peter's making more or less the same illusion that we should be dead to the sins of the world.
Yes, yeah. So our bodies are a living sacrifice. Obviously, for as long as we live, we should be sacrificing our material desires to the holiness of the kingdom.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And you can't be serving the kingdom sitting in a tavern or watching porno flicks in your
can't,
living room.
Oh, man.
It's just not possible.
Man, you want to make my life hard, don't you? Well, verse 2 totally confirms what you're saying, and be not conformed to this world.
Absolutely. And James, you know, to support Paul again, James tells us that a friend of the world is an enemy of God.
That's right, right. "But be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect, the will of God." Now, of course, how are you going to prove it if you're not doing things, if you're not doing good works?
Absolutely. And,
okay.
And that includes the Christian should want to follow the law.
That's right. Exactly. Because nothing can be defined as a good work unless it's lawful, unless it's just and good. Verse 3, "For I say, through the grace given to me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God has dealt to every man the measure of faith." So each of us have different levels of faith. And, you know, we're not to judge each other, certainly not harshly, because, in fact, I would put it this way. I've been judged harshly by others who thought they had more faith than I do. And I said, "I beg your pardon. You don't have more faith than I do. You just think you have more faith than I do."
There's another device concocted by the AV here, and that's that the words "to every man" should simply say "to each that are among you."
Okay.
And there's, you know, that all these little things add up.
Right,
into their universalistic equation.
Yes. To each, it says to every man that is among you. It says it among you.
Okay.
And, of course, but then if you ignore the among you and you focus on the every man, and you have the modern version or modern definition of man, meaning everybody including the Adamites, then, of course, this sounds universalistic. Yes.
Well, right, but I mean that it contributes to the whole universalist. When you hear it in 1,000 verses, and it doesn't usually say among you, you know, people get thrilled with that and they believe it.
Yes, yes, I finally figured out where guest number 6 is coming from. Where from whence come the other races? And that the other races are the Che / beasts of the field. In Genesis 1:23 and 24, and I believe also 1:25, and the Adamites are not created until Genesis 1:26 and 27, to whom dominion is given. Okay, that's the distinction. The beast of the field is a broad category that includes featherless bipeds. Okay, it includes the other races, but not the Adamic race. Okay, so where were we? Verse 4, I think. Yes. "For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office. So we, being many, are one body in Christ, and everyone members one of another. So in other words, we're to consider ourselves, our Christian Israelite community, as being one body.
Well, and, right. And, yes. And I think that what Paul is saying here, I might be getting a little ahead of you again, but every member of the Christian community is important.
Yes.
Regardless of the quality of the gifts which he or she has from Yahweh.
Exactly.
And even though some of us may be especially gifted, we are nothing without the rest of the brethren in the community.
Right,
and
right.
If you're a rocket scientist or if you can build automobiles, that's
yes.
nice.
Yes.
But you really can't build automobiles
right.
without the baker and the butcher
yes.
and the guy who's out plowing the
yes.
fields.
Yeah, and this is why I have such a tremendous problem, as you well know, with the gospel of personal salvation, which simply ignores the community. It puts all the emphasis on me, myself, and I being saved, and it totally misses the point of the kingdom being a community of Israelites doing each other good.
Right, and if you're not working for what you have and what you require, and if you're not working for it honestly, then you're taking it from somebody.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And, of course, this dog-eat-dog competitive world, which is simply a Jewish model that a lot of our people have bought into, have found out that that type of life is hardly worth living. It's not our spirit. Our people simply do not thrive. You know, some of them do. A small minority of them do. But we can't compete with the Jews on their own turf.
Well, that's because the Jews just, they conspire against us, and we're too gullible to realize it.
That's right.
I mean, just the fact that they think that they're dealing with the Christian, they are actually raised and bred to take advantage of us.
Yes.
It's in the Talmud. It's all over the Talmud.
Right.
It's the core teaching of the Talmud.
That's how parasites
absolutely.
Operate. That's right.
The core teaching of the Talmud is... Take advantage of non-Jews and suck them for everything that you can.
That's right. They sink their teeth in like a leech. They sink their teeth into your blood, and they start sucking.
And that's their religion.
That's their religion. That's right. And they disguise it so well. They disguise it with false piety, as we talked about on last night's show. There was tremendous, Matthew 6 and 7, all about the false piety of the scribes and Pharisees, and the average Judeo-Christian simply has no concept of this.
Absolutely not. And being a white man in a Jewish community or in downtown Manhattan, or you're like an amoeba in a sea of amino acids.
That's right.
Everything around you is going to eat away at you.
Yes.
And that's how they naturally act, and you're not going to visibly perceive it.
That's right. That's right. Because you're victimized and. You know, and the victimization proceeds actually across generations, from one generation to the next, and to the next, and to the next. And so our people don't have...
Well, because parasites beget parasites, and
sheep
get sheep.
Yes, exactly. And more parasites, and more parasites. And pretty soon you think the parasites are normal. And we're all diseased. And that's why our country is going to hell. Verse 6. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith. Let me just go through these up through verse 11 here. Or ministry, let us wait on our ministering, or he that teaches on teaching, or he that exhorts on exhortation. He that gives, let him do it with simplicity. He that rules with diligence. He that shows mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be without dissimulation, or in other words, hypocrisy, I believe is what that should say. Abhor that which is evil, cling to that which is good. So obviously Paul believes there's a difference between good and evil, and that we should prefer one over the other.
Absolutely.
Yes. Now, the law is not done away with, because how else do you define evil versus good?
No, we need that law to function. I mean, the basic Ten Commandments,
yes.
at least, are everything that we need to do.
Yes,
and love like brother as yourself. Because if you love like brother as yourself, you're not going to steal from him. You're not going to
right.
cheat him.
Yeah.
You're not going to sleep with his
yeah.
wife. You
yeah.
know,
and you can't steal from yourself, or can you? I suppose some people have figured out how to steal from themselves
well,
and get away
you know,
with it.
People do steal from themselves when they're caught up in the Babylonian system.
Yes. Yes.
When people are sitting in the movie houses and the cinemas and their kids are home with the babysitter, they're stealing from themselves.
Yes.
They should be home with their kids instead of supporting the Jews that made the movie.
You're right, bro. You're absolutely right. Any comments on the verses 6 through 9? Anything to hear that is mistranslated or out of kilter?
It's nothing that's important,
yes.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I didn't follow along with every word.
Yes. Basically he's saying that, as you briefly brought up, that every one of us has different talents and abilities, so we should strive to perfect them, obviously. And we should, as he mentioned earlier in, I forget which verse it was, we shouldn't be haughty about our rank and position in society. And if, other people aren't as well off as we are, we shouldn't look down on them. We should, on the contrary.
Well, right, because even a man like Thomas Edison wouldn't have been able to accomplish anything that he accomplished if it wasn't for all the laboratory assistants.
Yes.
And if it wasn't for the people in the community that picked up his garbage,
yes.
that made sure his plumbing worked,
right.
that made sure his food supply was there.
Yes.
All of those people are an important cog in the wheel.
Right, exactly.
And we need them as much as we need the Thomas Edison.
Exactly, because it's a whole, as you mentioned. It's a complete set. It's a complete body. And it's an organic, I like to use the term organic, it's an organic unity.
And that's why the intellectual property of a community, the entire community should have a stake in.
Yes.
And under Jewish capitalism, only the corporation that finances the invention,
yeah.
or that buys the rights to it from its inventor, they only have a stake in it.
That's right.
And
That's right.
Jewish capitalism totally ignores the needs of the community and the factor and the role in the community that allows intellectual property to be developed.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's why they've been... In the late 90s, they tried to shorten the patent law from 17 years to 3 years, because that would give them, they could get their dirty mitts on inventions even sooner. All right, verse 10. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Well, guess what? We're supposed to prefer our kinsmen?
And that's exactly how I translated it,
okay.
And that's exactly what we're supposed to do.
That's right. That's
you
right.
can't go hire somebody of another race or even somebody of another religion.
Yes.
Before you hire a white Christian.
Right.
You can't do it.
Yes, yes. Should always prefer your brethren for any kind of project, especially those, if they need money or they need a job, blah, blah, blah. You should give them the opportunity first because
they're... Right. And if there's a white man that owns a grocery store in your town and all the other grocery stores are Korean,
or Jews.
You better be going out of your way to get to the white man's store.
Right.
And you better not care if the milk is an extra dime a gallon.
That's right. That's right. Because it's all going to benefit the white community. Verse 11, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Of course, if we're serving the Lord, we're obeying his law.
That verse 11 reads, with diligence, not hesitating.
Okay.
It's not slothful in business.
Okay. Yes.
This is your gospel of personal redemption, of
yes.
personal salvation for you and personal riches.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the way we are saved personally is by having that relationship with Yahweh. But it not just in the sense of belief or faith, but getting to know Yahweh. And the only way you can really know Yahweh is by reading his word. That's why he had his prophets compose these books.
Well, right. But the example that Yahshua Christ set was that he gave himself on behalf of his kinsmen.
His kinsmen, right. Is there a kinsmen redeemer?
And we, each of us, are
yes.
beckoned to follow
right.
in those footsteps.
Right. Okay.
To
now,
give your life on behalf of your brethren.
Right. Now, the verse occurs to me that Jesus so, or God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, blah, blah, blah. And of course, that it seems to totally contradict Romans 12:2. Let me read this again. And be not conformed to this world. But, we're supposed to reject this world. So if we're supposed to reject this world, why does God supposedly say he so loved the world, blah, blah, blah?
That's a matter of perspective, because
okay.
in John 3, John's talking about the original order as it was founded by Yahweh.
Okay.
The word cosmos means order.
Okay.
And it can quite often be translated society.
Yes.
But it's the original order of things,
yes,
as they were constituted by,
yes,
Yahweh.
Yes.
Is the order or the society,
right,
that,
right,
John is talking about in,
and that's
John,
why,
chapter 3.
And that's why he created Adam and Eve, to redeem this planet. But, of course, our ancestors failed.
Right. The entire Bible story,
right,
is a story of rebellion,
yes,
after rebellion.
So it's not saying that Yahweh loves this corrupt world order. In
no,
fact,
absolutely not.
Because everything else in the Bible says this corrupt world order is going to be destroyed.
Well, right.
There's
but
no
eventually,
yes,
the order that Yahweh originally instituted will be founded.
That will be restored. That's what will be restored. Exactly. Okay, very good.
That's the restoration of all things. All what things?
Yeah, right. Before the fall of Adam and Eve, and before the fall of the fallen angels.
Right, but
yes,
you can't restore a Hutu or a Tutsi to anything.
That's right, yeah. And obviously the fallen angels refuse to be restored. That's why we're going through all this right now, because they're utterly rebellious and have no intention of repenting at all.
And a restoration means the removal of anything that's been corrupted.
Very good. Excellent.
And that's every bastard.
Yeah, that's right.
And all the goats.
That's corruption. That's adultery. Yes.
All the goats. The,
yes,
products of adultery.
Exactly. Matthew chapter 25. All the goats will be put on his left hand, and they will be burned, wrapped up as tares and burned. That's clearly what Jesus Christ is telling us, folks. All right, so verse 12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer. Instant. That's kind of an odd. What is that's the odd translation here.
It's firmly persisting in prayer.
Firmly persisting. Continuing,
yes,
instant. Boy, that's an odd expression. Okay, verse
13. Well, that's the 1600s.
Right, yeah, maybe it was common in those days.
Right, it's firmly persisting.
Okay, so persisting in prayer. Verse 13, distributing to the necessity of saints, given
well,
to...
Well, it's sharing in the needs of these saints.
Yes.
And it's not the saints that the Pope makes.
Right.
Because the Pope can't make a saint.
No.
You can make a saint. A saint comes out of your loins.
Right.
But the Pope can't make a saint.
The saints are only Israelites. There's no other person could possibly be a saint.
It's the people that are separated and dedicated to the purposes of God. That's,
yes,
what the word
that's
means.
Yahweh. Yeah.
And that's only Israel.
Only Israel. Verse 14, bless them which persecute you, bless and not curse. And this is a direct comparison to Matthew 5. 44 in the Sermon on the Mount, okay? So Paul is not contradicting Yahshua Messiah, verse 15. Rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. You know, share. You know, they're our brothers and sisters. We should share in their experiences. Verse 16, be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. So it's basically more of the same advice, be kind, generous, and faithful to your own kind.
Well, this says, but be accommodating oneself to those that are humble.
Okay.
Being of the same mind towards one another, not thinking of lofty things. In other words, all those high aspirations that the Jewish television,
yes,
gets you to follow, I mean, you want to be a star, you want to be rich, you want,
yeah,
to be, that's all.
You want to have a Cadillac.
Yeah, that's all deceit.
Yes.
It's all self-deceit and,
right,
self-vanity.
Yes, and in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, seek first the kingdom, and all these things will be added unto you.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so, and this says, but accommodate oneself to those that are humble.
Yes.
Not to the Jews, to those that,
right,
are humble.
Exactly.
And do not be wise on account of yourselves.
Right. Verse 17, recompense to no man evil for evil, provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men. Matthew 5:39. You know, we're not supposed to take personal revenge. We're supposed to be humble and disciplined enough not to retaliate. You know, when somebody accuses you falsely of something, don't jump back at them. Just hold your peace for a while until you find out, why is he mad at me? What did I do wrong? And then you try your absolute best to be humble and not condescending, but gracious to to that person.
Hey, it's being a piece of all men is, you know, agree with thy adversary quickly.
Yes.
However, your adversary is not, that's your Israelite adversary.
Right.
It's not the enemies of God. They're a whole different story.
It's not the invading
army.
And
we're not to agree with the enemies of God.
That's right. That's right. So, verse 19, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. So I think this is one of the most difficult things for Israelites to learn, is to not take personal revenge. You know, here we're talking, you know, even against the system, even against the evil system, because when you do it all on your own, they're going to bury you.
Right, but the idea that vengeance belongs to Yahweh is all the way back in Deuteronomy 32:35.
Oh, certainly.
That's a quote from.
Certainly, certainly.
It's not a new idea. It's not an invention of Paul's.
Right.
And we're not to take vengeance against our brethren.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and we're supposed to do everything we can to work things out with our brethren. And if it doesn't work out, then Yahweh will take care of it. Okay? Yahweh will take care of it. Verse 20. Therefore, if your enemy hunger, feed him. Of course, we're talking about Israelite, the enemies in the community, the adversaries within the community. If he thirst, give him drink, for in so doing you shall heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, verse 21 is a clear admonition that we are to do good works.
Right, and it's also, what Paul's telling us here is to be better towards our brethren than they are towards us.
Right, that's right. That's right. And that's what we should strive to do, that we should always. And that's why if you react with anger and you want to take personal revenge on people, well, then you're really not lifting up the kingdom. you're sinking back into the old manner of doing things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're supposed to have the law written in our hearts and the love of our fellow brethren, our Israelite citizenry. We're supposed to have that always in our minds and never leave go of that, okay? Chapter 13, verse 1.
We're going to be here a while on chapter 13.
Okay, all right. Let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Okay, so what are we to make of verse 1 here?
Well, you know, a lot of people in Israel identity, I can't just address verse 1. I have to address this chapter as a whole.
Okay.
It's Paul is talking about us subjecting ourselves to worldly governments.
Okay.
And there's two ways to look at Romans 13. And I have a quote from Ken Lent here. And I really like Ken Lent. We don't agree on a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
But I think he's a really good guy, and he tries to be, you know, as scholarly as possible. But I don't think he has some things right. But I really admire the guy.
Yes.
And Ken Lent says, of Romans 13, righteous civil government is ordained by Yahweh. And he cites Romans 13 as an ordination by Yahweh of righteous civil government.
Right.
Which is what I'm going to get to in a minute, because that's not scriptural.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
And Ken goes on to say, as an administration to punish evildoers while rewarding his faithful servants with peace, joy, and security, in this age of the indwelling of the Holy Spirit since the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2 and the new covenant in Christ where God's laws are now written in the hearts of his saints, the administration of God's laws has grown and matured into the commonwealth manner of implementing the laws of the eternal King. Well, I would say that that's certainly not what has happened.
Well, maybe happened here now and then in history.
You know, once in a while it happens by accident, okay, because there's no wolf in the sheepfold.
Right, right.
Because they ignored a part of the world for a couple of minutes or a couple of years.
Yes.
The basic way to look at Romans chapter 13 is that the children of Israel are being punished, and they're still being punished.
Right.
It's the children of Israel who rejected Yahweh as their king and have had worldly governments ever since.
Right.
And pretty soon, they're going to be begging to have Yahweh back as their king.
Right.
That's the
right.
scriptural story of the Bible.
Yes, yes.
Because Adam accepted the error of Eve, and therefore he accepted Cain. Satan rules the world.
Yes.
Genesis 4:7, Luke 4:5 make this perfectly clear.
Right. Yeah,
many, I believe, self-righteous Christian Israel identity pastors claim that this Romans 13 only applies to righteous government, but that can't be true because Yahweh raised up Pharaoh, as it says in Exodus 9:16.
Right.
That Pharaoh was certainly not righteous.
Right.
The children of Israel were told, as soon as they wanted a king and demanded a king, that those kings would rake them over the coals and be absolutely unrighteous for them.
He would use those kings to punish us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he says this time and time again. Right.
And another thing we don't learn from, and we should, is the parable of the trees of the forest in Judges chapter 9.
Yes.
It's not translated very well in the King James Version of the Bible. However, the basic gist of this parable is that we would not be ruled over by good trees.
Mm-hmm.
The olive tree and the fig tree refused to rule over us.
Right. Yes.
And that's, you know, equated to racial trees or the family trees.
Sure.
The bramble bush is more than happy to rule over us.
Of course. Because we're the ones that always have prosperity to steal from.
Well, right, but we're not going to, in other words, we're not going to be ruled over by good people, but evil ones.
Right, because we're not obeying the law, so we're getting our just punishment.
Now, there's no disparity in the world, in the Word,
yes.
and except in the minds of its readers.
Right.
And if Paul here is talking
right.
only about righteous government, as so many people insist, then the Word would be inaccurate in all these other places. But
right.
of course
guess,
it's not.
Guest 6 asks an honest, fair question. Why do the children pay for the sins of the fathers? I can answer that quickly. Is because the children engage in the same sins as the fathers.
Well, quite often that's true.
That's right.
But
right.
it's just a fact of life. If you want to be a bum and lay around on your butt, your kids are going to be bums and lay around on their butts.
Right.
I mean, look at what the
like
welfare
father, like son, yes.
in this country has done to generations of people.
Right, right.
And the Social Security system and all the other government, well, they're called handouts, but they're not
yeah.
handouts because
yeah.
nobody pays attention to the hand in.
Yeah, well, here again.
The hand in everybody else's pocket.
Here again, the organic view of Christianity, the Christian Israel community. You know, you have to think in terms of we are a single body. And, you know, and each one of us is a member or, you know, you can modernize the jargon here and say we're all cells of the same organism, you know. And that being that, we have to work for each other to keep the whole organism healthy, okay? How many Christians in the world today think that way?
Well, none.
That's right.
They only think of themselves.
That's right. They're only thinking about themselves.
It's a self-centered, vain society.
That's right.
And that's because we've been raised, you know, we weren't like this 150 years ago. For the most part, we weren't.
Uh-huh.
Well,
yes.
We've been raised on, well, it started with vaudeville, and then they got into the movie business,
yes.
and then the television and radio business.
Yes.
And they've taken over our entire media, and even though most
yes.
white Christians don't know it, 99% of their education has come from the Jews.
That's right. That's right.
Almost everything they think
yes.
they know has come from the Jews.
That's right.
From
That's
either
right.
Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, CBS, ABC, NBC, Disney, Time Warner, I don't care.
That's
it's
right.
run by Jews,
yes.
and they're
right.
our teachers.
Right. Now, but certainly we aren't supposed to accept, like, tyrannical government and, you know, think that it's good, and we should subject ourselves. But we, at the same time, we have to realize that, you know, as individuals, there's only so much we can do, and we have to pick our fights carefully, because I'm reminded of Gordon Cowell and, I can't think, Matthews, I forget his first name. I'm not sure if he was actually identity. Gordon Cowell was actually identity. But he just started talking about the unfairness of the IRS and the fact that the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified, okay? And the Jews did a number on him. They executed him. And so, you know, now you have to be willing to you know, if you're going to take on the establishment, the evil establishment, then you have to be prepared, you know, to be treated unfairly, okay?
Well, right, but Christians are their own worst enemy.
Right.
Because they give the power to the Jews.
Right. They have. We have. Yes.
If we didn't go to the movies and buy their movie tickets, if we didn't buy the record albums produced by Los Angeles and Nashville, if we didn't watch television, if we didn't buy Jewish newspapers, they wouldn't have no money to enslave us.
Exactly. Yeah.
Their system would fall apart.
Exactly. Yeah.
We empower them.
Right, right. Yeah, so vigilantism, therefore, is always something. Let me put it this way. What about Phineas? Wasn't Phineas a vigilante?
Yes, but he was a vigilante in the righteous kingdom.
In the righteous kingdom, yeah. And he executed two evildoers, and Yahweh blessed the community, okay? So maybe we'll be in that position again, but we have to understand, you know, the book of Revelation says, who can make war against the beast? The beast has all the, you know, has all the cards. He owns the whole deck. And if we're lucky to get a single card of that deck, you know, we have to do what's right and, you know, not waste our time trying to fight a totally corrupt system.
Well, right, but, you know, people don't understand that, you know, the children of Israel were told that they would be punished for seven times.
Yes.
And that's 2,520 years.
Yes.
Now, there are prophecies in not only the Revelation, but in Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 7 about the term that men would be ruled over by the dragon and by the beast.
Yes.
And it's very clearly 2,520 years, and when we look back on history, those prophecies were perfectly correct.
That's right.
Now, Yahshua Christ came, and the gospel spread about 700 years into that period of punishment.
Yes.
So there's another 1,800 years from Paul's time remaining. Now, if this series of beast empires ruling, as Daniel 2 says, wherever the children of Adam dwell,
yes,
then, and it's decreed by Yahweh to last 2,520 years,
right,
isn't it absolutely ridiculous to fight against it?
Well,
and
yeah,
that's what Paul's telling us.
It's because it's Yahweh's will. It's the same thing in Jerusalem when the Babylonian captivity started. There were some of the Israelites refused to go along. And what
right.
did Yahweh say to them? He said, well, if you don't, I'll destroy you.
Absolutely.
And he did.
And Paul is Romans chapter 13
yes.
has to be understood in that context.
Right. So you have to accept your punishment, in other words.
Absolutely.
Now,
and
mean,
if you do good, you'll be rewarded.
That's right. You will be rewarded, and things will work out just fine, even though you're in an oppressive governmental system. Now, that doesn't mean we should accept, you know, injustice. And you know, we can certainly organize, and you know, it boils back down to 2 Chronicles 7:14. If you will but humble yourselves and obey my law, then everything that you want will work out for you. But we haven't been obeying his law.
Absolutely. And I have to add this, and I'm reading from my notes in William Fink versus the Paul Bashers.
Okay.
I addressed Clayton Douglas on this issue.
All right.
It may be evident that the original seven times of punishment, it's over with.
Yes.
And there's
well,
other prophecies in play, and it's
yes.
over with, and it's over with recently,
yes.
depending upon when you expected it to start, and there are different times that it started. In other words, you know, for some of the tribes, it started earlier because
right.
the deportations from Israel were spread out over 130 years,
right.
140
well,
years.
No, well, the first one occurred, the half-tribe of Manasseh, in 745 B.C.
Well, actually, no, that was 721 B.C.
Well, I have the records from Paul. I forget his actual secular name.
The Assyrians came in and demanded tribute at 745 B.C. or 741 B.C. or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It's immaterial. It happened right around that time.
Right. Yeah, so it's past. The 2,520 years is past. There's no doubt about that.
Well, right. However, you know, as we came out of that period of punishment, that's when we went into a period of the Western democracy
right.
and self-rule, and we're still enslaved.
Yes.
However, yes. we think we're free. In other words, we're in the time of Jacob's trouble.
That's right.
It's a separate prophetic period.
That is most definitely correct.
and it's we are out of the punishment of the tyrannical governments, on paper.
Yes.
But we're still
yes.
ruled by tyrants.
Right.
Because
yes.
it's the final lesson is that we can't even rule over ourselves.
Well, we're under the domination of the beast and the false prophet and the dragon. All three of them are perfectly in place at this point in time. The vast majority of our people do not understand this. And that's why they think that the system can be salvaged politically when it cannot. It's utterly corrupt from top to bottom.
Absolutely. But my point is that as the 2,520 years ended, that's when we became democracy.
Right.
And that's
okay.
when we came under the false notion, because that's what it is,
that's right.
that we rule ourselves and
yeah.
that we're free.
Right, exactly, because we have been purchased by Yahshua, and we belong to him.
And we can't possibly be free.
That's right. Yeah, but
the only freedom that we have is in Yahshua.
That's right. That's right. A perfect law of liberty is to obey Yahweh's law. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Okay, verse 2, chapter 13. Whosoever therefore resists the power, resists the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. Now, of course, the mainstream theologians say, well, this means that no matter what we're asked to do, we shouldn't complain. And, you know, obviously the founding fathers complained. They weren't willing to live.
Well, they brought us out, and they brought us in America out of the rule of a tyrannical king.
That's right.
Into a constitutional a republic.
But
they
did it as a body, not
right.
as individuals. Okay? That's what I think the lesson is here. That, and so self-righteousness and taking personal vengeance. I mean, if you want to be Rambo, but know you're going to get shot. Okay? And so we're constantly being admonished to do this as a unit, as a body, as a congregation, as an ecclesia. Right? Isn't that, and if we lose sight of the fact that we're supposed to act as an ecclesia, then we fail.
Well, you know, the government, it's decreed. One man can't fight against it. And in the Christian paradigm, one man should, if he sees wrongdoing, speak out against it, but he should mind his own house first.
Yes.
And Yahshua, we're told that we would be saved out of this by Yahshua himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And no man is going to change that. No man, I don't, Christian identity pastor, and a lot of them would like to try it, but I mean, look at what happened to Adolf Hitler.
Right.
He tried to separate the wheat from the tares on his own.
Yes.
And he was destined to fail.
Yes.
No matter
yes.
how righteous sounding or noble sounding his purpose is,
yes.
we are not to separate the wheat from the tares. And,
yeah,
and
we can't
not,
do that ourselves. Right.
We are not to overcome this government
yeah,
ourselves.
Yeah, that's the parable we'll be getting into probably next time, you know, on maybe next Friday, that you know, we have to await the judgment day. That's when all this is going to come down.
Absolutely.
And we can't rush it.
And in the meantime, we're told to give unto Caesar the things of the Caesars.
Right.
And to give unto Yahweh the things of the Yahweh.
That's right.
But if we're giving to Babylon the things of the Yahweh,
yes.
we can never expect salvation.
That's
and that's what most Christians are doing.
That's right.
They're supporting the Jews. They're supporting multiculturalism.
Yes.
They're supporting global capitalism.
Yes, yes.
And they're the things we're supposed to get out of.
Yes. And our individual ecclesias, our individual communities, wherever they might be situated, will prosper if we act accordingly. So it behooves us to establish Christian Israel community wherever we are. Okay, verse 3. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. This is a, what is this word? Is this a good translation here?
For rulers are not a terror to good work, but to evil. That's my translation.
Okay.
Too.
What does this mean? For rulers are not a terror.
Well, if you're doing good and taking care of yourself and your brethren and doing a thing and paying your taxes,
okay, then they won't bother you.
Then you won't be bothered.
Right. We must accept our punishment. And it seems unjust. It seems unfair that, you know, we're being taxed by tyrants. But yet, you know, there's ways in which. You know, there's always ways in which you can peacefully resist and what's the term? Civil disobedience.
Well, right, you do what you can.
Yes, you do what you can.
But you pay what the government tells you
you have to pay.
Because there's no sense in sitting in prison over a tax bill.
That's right.
And why would you not pay your taxes?
Well, because
if you made the money, I mean, just pay it.
Yeah, right. Well, because it's an evil tyrant who's spending it all on on making an even more corrupt
system.
That's
the sins and the punishment that resulted from your father's wanting to be ruled by men.
Yes, yes. Okay, I see that perfectly clearly. The reason I'm giving you a hard time with this is because there's a lot of naysayers out there who don't want to hear what you're saying.
I understand that, but let them show me the scripture that says that I'm wrong.
Yes, right, right. Yeah, and but we're not saying that we should support corruption. We should always support righteousness however we can.
Right, if something's evil, we have to speak up about it.
That's right, that's right.
But you have to go with the law. I mean, the laws of the land are the laws of the land, and there's no way around them but to sit in prison.
Yeah.
Believe me, I've sat in prison, and it's not fun.
Right,
and you're not helping your brother.
Right, by sitting in prison.
Sitting in prison.
Yeah,
no, you're not giving the Yahweh the things of the Yahweh.
Yeah, and you can pay a couple $1,000 tax, and then you're free to go about the rest of your business.
Absolutely.
Where sitting in prison, you can't do that. And many who sit in prison just get angrier and angrier and don't learn anything.
And if you had the faith, then pay the tax, because Yahweh is going to provide you with
the things
that you need.
Yes, he will reward you. As long as you obey his law and call upon his name, he will reward you.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and love your brethren.
That's an element of the faith that a lot of our people simply don't get because let me put it this way. They take pleasure in fighting against the beast. Right? What's your experience in prison? Are some of these guys in there because they just wanted to bash that guy in the face?
And they perennially have a hard time.
Yes.
All of those guys have nothing but trouble.
Yes.
All the time. And they spend their whole lives caught up in fighting the trouble.
Right. So, in other words, we're supposed to organize as an ecclesia and leave aside this old notion of personal vigilantism, because it gets us nowhere.
Right, and if you're not out, you're not going to make a whole lot of money as a Christian. I'm sorry.
Right.
I mean, if you're making $500,000 a year, then you're not being a good Christian because you're evidently working at some unsavory trade for 16 hours a day.
Right.
I mean.
Yes, yes. Okay, verse 4, for he is the minister of God to you for good or for judgment. Is that the word that's used there for good?
A servant of Yahweh is to you for good.
Okay. But if you
practice evil, be fearful.
Yes, right. And in many ways, they don't perceive themselves as doing evil when they're, taking personal revenge. But, personal revenge always has an element of ego in there, okay? And it's, I'm doing it for me. I want revenge, okay? And that's what's wrong with it, okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so if you're not doing it as a member of the community, we should be organizing politically. And just making our needs and gripes felt to the politicians, but our people aren't doing that. They're not doing that either. It seems like they're either doormats or they're personal vigilantes. That seems to be the case right now. One extreme to the other. Okay. Now let me just start again with verse 4. For he is the minister of God to you for good. But if you do that which is evil, be afraid, for he bears not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that does evil. Okay? And so, but most of these personal vigilantes will deny that they're doing anything evil.
Right.
Okay? So you're telling them that perhaps that they're wrong about that?
Well, we're freed from the law, and we're freed. We have no right to enforce the law because our forefathers forsook it.
Right, right, okay.
We have no right to enforce the kingdom law.
Yeah.
We should try. Christians should strive to follow it themselves.
Yes.
And to shun those who don't follow it.
Exactly. Okay. Yes.
And we should strive to commune with those who do follow it.
And that's building community.
But we have, right, it's building community based on obedience to God.
Right.
But we're told to take the people that won't live by the law and to put them out of our community.
Right.
But we don't stone them to death.
That's right.
That we've lost that
Yahweh will
right.
take care of it. Yahweh will take care of it, yes. Okay.
Absolutely. And that's 1 Corinthians chapter 5.
Yes. Okay, very good. Verse 5. Wherefore you must needs be subject not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake.
On which account to be subordinate is a necessity, not only because of indignation, but also because of conscience. Because these empires, these beast empires, were ordained to exist.
Yes.
And they were ordained by Yahweh.
Uh-huh.
And it's to teach us a lesson.
Right.
But, well,
of humility.
Right. And a lot of mainstream Christians miss, and even a lot of identity Christians miss, is that this life doesn't matter.
Right.
It's the next life that matters.
Right.
Doing the right thing in this life matters. On a personal level, you better do the right thing.
Store things up for heaven. Yes. Okay.
Right. However, to store up dignity and honor for yourself in this life and riches for yourself and all of the worldly things, they don't matter.
Uh-huh.
They don't mean anything.
Right.
And
right.
they're not going to, don't,
yeah.
You might be comfortable for 20 or 30 years here.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen to you for the rest, for eternity?
Right, right. Yeah, well, people want personal justice in this life, and there's nothing wrong with that. However, you have to ask the question, are you personally a sinner in other areas? Who are you to demand justice and righteousness when you're doing a lot of other things wrong? Isn't that part of the problem here as well?
Right, and you may not even realize what you're doing wrong.
Exactly, exactly, yes. That's why you have to maintain a sense of humility.
R.P. Wake made a comment, and a few people made comments about my saying that people that are wealthy aren't being good Christians. But most people that are wealthy that earn a lot of money today are earning all of that money because they are beholden to the global capitalist system.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Are you a doctor? If you're a doctor, are you giving out vaccinations to kids?
Yeah. Have you made a contract?
Are you pumping people full of that crap?
Have you made a contract with them?
Right. Are you a lawyer? Mm-hmm. If you're a lawyer, are you putting poor white people out of their houses?
Right.
What are you doing in your life?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're making a lot of money, that's what you have to ask yourself.
Right.
But those people that are making all that money, they're not caring about conversations like this and about thoughts like this.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So it boils down to humility and picking your fights very carefully, because when you're fighting against the beast, he's going to roll over with his steamroller like he did Rachel Corrie, bless her soul. She was doing the right thing, standing up for the Palestinian people, but it was a pretty risky, and as it turned out, maybe you could call it courageous, but a pretty foolish thing to do, to stand in front of a bulldozer being operated by a Jew.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. Yes, yeah. Now here in verse, actually, let me quickly say here, I lost connection with my server, so I cannot access the switchboard, okay? I don't know if you can see the chat room. But my chat room froze up, and there's no way I can type any messages in it right now. So
okay.
We'll just take it to the end of the show. If you see anything in the chat room, go ahead and point it out. Okay. So I've actually found a typo in the King James here, Romans 13 verse 6. It has the word for, F-O-R, twice in a row, which is obviously a typo. So I'll just read it correctly. For this cause pay you tribute also. For they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. So even though they may be corrupt administrators, yes, but this is the just reward of the Israelite body for disobeying his law, right? Isn't that?
Well, right, absolutely.
Okay.
And this statement by Paul only makes sense if Paul was talking about lesser regional authorities who themselves pay tribute in turn to the empire.
Okay, okay, yes.
And that's the context.
Right.
He, you know, when he says to obey the authorities, he doesn't mean the emperor in Rome. He means the local administrators and the people that operate the day-to-day government.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, and if this system of tribute weren't in place, chances are the Roman army would come and just slaughter everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Well, first, the Jewish tax farmer would go cry to the emperor.
That's right.
That the people wouldn't pay him the taxes.
Yes. Yes.
And then the army would come and
crush
him.
That's right. And they'd mop up. Exactly. Verse 7. Well, now we're getting ready to face a very similar scenario to that. Because you know that they're coming to take our guns away. You know that they want to persecute anybody who's in the identity movement or the white nationalist movement. They're going to start coming after us. So, you know, we have to trust in Yahweh here. We keep on doing what's right. We keep on preaching the truth and trust in Yahweh that as long as we do things according to that plan, he will protect us.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But I don't know, the people that whine the most about their guns getting taken away, the people that spend 4 hours a night in front of the television,
right.
And their shelves are lined with the latest videos.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yes. Okay. Verse 7. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. So what we're talking about here is recognizing the just punishment that Yahweh has rendered upon his people Israel, not as the mainstream Judeo-Christians would argue is, well, you should obey and honor and worship whatever power is in, you know, no matter how evil it is, and you shouldn't complain, okay? And therefore, they're all legitimate, completely legitimate, even though they may be corrupt. So,
well, right, but you could, you know, pay your taxes and profess that the government is evil at the same time. There's no wrong in that.
That's right.
And that's what you should do.
That's what we should be doing.
You have to be able to engage with your community, so you better pay your taxes.
Right, right. Yeah, and so if you so by paying your taxes, you're still around to help organize your community, which is what we should be doing, establishing our own body politic separate from Mystery Babylon.
Right.
Okay.
But today most Christians give to Caesar, they cheat Caesar out of as much as they can, and they give it to Babylon.
Right. They give it to the false prophet, who in turn gives it to Babylon. The false religions and churches they go to, which they actually do, because the 501c3, even though they're tax exempt, they give it to Mystery Babylon in other ways, you know, such as borrowing money to build churches.
Well, yeah, but also by shipping money overseas. I mean, they do
spend
some money
absolutely
overseas. To keep the tyrants in Africa perpetuated.
Yes, afloat. Yes, exactly. Who keep killing members of our own community, the white racial community. Yes, absolutely. Verse 8, owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loves another has fulfilled the law. So in other words, this kind of boils down the argument of the first seven verses. So in other words, once you've paid your taxes, you owe nothing to anybody, and now you're at least relatively free to go about your business and do the right thing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that's the key. That's the, you know, your life is not your own.
Yes.
You know, you give what you have to the government, and you give the rest to your brethren.
Right, right. Yes. And this is a very difficult lesson for a lot of people to learn because, you know, as you said earlier, people want to perceive themselves as being belonging to themselves and to nobody else. That's
right.
what we mean by free. I'm free, you know. But no, Israelites are not free. We belong to Yahweh.
Right.
Yahshua purchased us.
And the decree, you know, the mainstream churches don't know what the decrees are of Yahweh in the prophets and in the law.
That's right. That's right.
So they can't teach the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know the word of Yahweh.
Yeah, they're just guessing. They're just
absolutely
guessing. Yes. Okay, I love verse 9. For this you shall not commit adultery, you shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet, and if there be any other commandment that is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Who says Paul doesn't teach the law?
He teaches nothing but the law.
Verse 10. Love works no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. So if you're truly a loving Israelite, you're not going to do any of these things. But now what about these televangelists and these antinomians who believe that the law has been abolished? What are they doing? Are they doing anything good?
Well, you know, I have to say that we are basically, I mean, as a whole, a just people are blessed with a just government.
Yes.
And an unjust people are punished.
Yes.
By a government which becomes a tyranny.
That's right.
And Paul is telling us that
we get the
government
we deserve. Yes.
Yahweh will use the governments of man to punish us.
Right, right.
All right? Now, today, in today's day and age, we have an unjust, greedy, and hedonistic people, and we've been like that
for
several generations.
That's right.
And it's not a mistake, okay,
yes,
that this federal tyranny, the Jewish central banking system,
yes,
and the sports and entertainment industries in this country all began to grow up together around the same time.
Right.
They all began to get to the size that they are in the 19-teens and 20s.
That's right.
And yeah, and they've grown and grown since then.
Well, I can say that's when Pentecostalism, which began the race-mixing trend, that's when Pentecostalism and the race-mixing trend within Christianity began.
Well, right, but
yes,
it's also when the whole sports thing started to take
right,
off, organized
right,
sports,
gambling,
vaudeville,
right,
all the Jewish entertainments and distractions.
Right, and our people abandoned Yahweh and started becoming materialists.
Bread and circuses.
That's right.
It's
that's
Rome
right,
all over again.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and it's very hard for our people to understand that we are being chastised. Yahweh is using those people to chastise us because we're not obeying his law. I mean, that's the lesson here, and, you know, too many self-righteous Israelites don't want to accept that. They don't
absolutely
want to accept that as a fact. Okay, verse 11. And that, knowing the time that now it is nigh, high time to awaken out of our sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. And so what we've got here in the Christian world is everybody believes they're righteous, and you know, but still they're doing their own thing.
Absolutely. And Paul teaches the imminent return of Christ even 2,000 years ago, and there's a reason for that,
uh-huh,
and is because Christ told us over and over again that we were to always expect his to
right,
act as though his return was imminent.
Right, right.
In other words, you got a couple of college-age kids, and you and your wife are going away on vacation, and you're going to be back next Sunday. Well, those college-age kids are going to do what?
Yeah.
You're going to use your house to party until
exactly,
Saturday night.
Yes, and they might burn it down, too.
And you come back on Sunday to a mess.
Yes.
Or they're cleaning up at the last minute.
That's right.
Trying to cover up what they did all week.
Exactly.
Well, that's not the attitude Christians are supposed to have.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah,
we're supposed to act like Christians through the entire 2,000-year period or,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah, you should arrange for a family member to chaperone them and make sure nothing like that happens. But, yeah, our people have abandoned their children to the times. They have. Absolutely.
Well, absolutely. But my point is that your kids will goof off all week,
yes,
and try to clean their act up at last minute. Well, Paul taught the imminent return of Christ,
right,
so that we act the way we're supposed to
but,
through the entire week.
But the problem is the adults and the parents are acting the same way.
Oh, yeah.
That's why the children do that, isn't it?
Well,
because
well,
they're imitating their parents.
That's my point, is that in this case, the Father is Yahweh, and he's
yes,
coming back,
yes,
and he knows what we've been doing for
that's
2,000
right,
years.
That's right, yeah, and there's no covering it up.
There is no cover, right.
Right.
And that's why Paul taught the imminent return of Christ.
Right, exactly. Okay, verse 13, let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness. What does this word chambering mean?
Lasciviousness.
Lasciviousness. Okay,
chambering is going to bed with people.
Right, yeah, so, you know, swinging. Swinging, etc. not in strife and envying. And then one more verse in chapter 13. But put you on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof. And here's another commandment, not to engage in lust. I mean, he's giving us, you know, citation after citation after citation of things we should not do. And if there's no, and if the antinomians believe there's no more sin, then why is he giving us all this advice not to do these things?
You know, there must be 20 places in Paul's epistles where he goes through a list of sins.
Yes.
And tells us not to do them.
Right, right.
It's in almost every epistle, and it's in a lot of them two or three times.
Yeah, and yet the antinomians totally ignore those verses. They just plain ignore it. Yes. Yeah.
And they play on the confusion about the difference between the law and
right.
the works of the law.
Right.
Which is, you know, what they're confused over.
Right, right. Because if you turn on the television set and listen to these televangelists, they will all say, I mean, they've not one sermon, not 10 minutes goes by when they won't say, we are not under the law, but under grace, and the law has been abolished, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and as you know, they can't make sense out of what's happening in the world with that teaching. But they're part of the problem because they teach that the law has been abolished when the word does not say that. If you typed in into a concordance, an online concordance, the law has been abolished, and find out where it says that in the Bible, you won't find it because
well,
the Bible.
Of course not. And we demonstrated when we covered Romans chapter 2 at length that the Christian, even though we are not being judged by the law, the Christian should voluntarily seek to follow the law.
Right.
And to see it instituted.
Yes.
And
yes.
Paul says at the end of Romans chapter 3, do we, you know, dismiss the law, and he says, no, absolutely not.
Right, right.
We establish the law.
Yeah.
And our fathers agreed to the law as part of the marriage covenant with
yeah,
Yahweh,
yeah.
Exodus chapter 19, and
okay.
they refused to follow it.
Right. Now, would it be fair to say here in the book of Romans, because one of the things that, again, the historical context of these epistles is very much crucial to understanding what Paul is saying and to whom he is saying it to, okay? Now, and certainly back in the book of Acts, when Paul had his disagreement with Peter, because Peter, being a circumcised Judahite of the tribe of Benjamin, okay, of the house of Judah, living in Judea, Paul accused him of being a hypocrite because in the company of Judahites, he acted like a circumcised Israelite.
Right. He was playing both sides.
In the company of the exiles, he acted like an uncircumcised Israelite. Okay?
He was playing both sides of the fence.
He was playing both sides of the fence. The context is still Israel. Now, in this book of Romans, is he addressing circumcised Israelites or uncircumcised exiles?
Well, you know, he's addressing it, the Romans are the uncircumcised dispersion.
Yes.
And there's no doubt that they are the subject of the entire epistle to the Romans.
Right, right.
However, he's also, I mean, they must have some circumcised people among them.
Sure.
To bring them the gospel.
Right, okay.
And he's also, you know, speaking from a kingdom viewpoint quite often
yes,
in
yes.
this epistle.
And
it's
so,
impossible for him to escape that.
Yes. So because when he speaks of the law to the Romans, they don't know. They haven't been practicing the ritual law of the Levites, and then which was later, you know, adopted by the scribes and Pharisees.
Well, actually, they did have that.
They did?
And oh, yes. You know, the Roman high god was Jove.
Okay.
And Jove is Yahweh.
Yes. Okay.
There's no doubt that, I mean, in my mind, I'll dispute it with anybody.
Okay.
That Jove isn't Yahweh, and they had temples to Jove, but it was pagan worship.
Okay.
It was pagan worship before Rome was founded.
So they had a similitude.
Into paganism.
They had a similitude of the law, but they did not generally practice circumcision.
Right.
Okay.
They did not practice circumcision at all.
Okay.
The Romans did animal sacrifices in temples,
uh-huh.
like the Greeks sacrificed animals to Zeus.
Yes.
And so forth and so
and
on.
And like the Levites sacrifice them to Yahweh.
And that's why
yes.
Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10, I think it's 1 Corinthians 10, 19, 20, 21, 22, in there, that the things that the nation sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to Yahweh.
Right, right, right. Okay.
And he's talking about the pagan dispersion.
Yes, yes. So when he's addressing these Romans, he's addressing the pagan dispersion, which is none other than Israelites and no other people, and which he makes clear on numerous occasions in this book of Romans that he's addressing Israelites.
Right, and the Romans probably had some Japhethite Thracian blood.
Okay.
I don't doubt that at all, that, you know, they had a long sojourn amongst the Thracians in the land of Troy.
Yes.
However, they were basically Trojan Roman Judah.
Uh-huh.
They were the tribe, descendants of the tribe of Zarah Judah. And
right.
There may have been other Israelite tribes mixed in with them.
Right, right.
However, the Roman people were basically Zarah Judah.
Right. Now, this is, of course, after... Well, I'm sorry. This is before the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. To what extent do you think the Judahites of Judea had already begun migrating from Judea into Rome and Greece and Spain and Gaul, et cetera, to get away from what was going on there?
The real Judahites, and there must have been some Edomites among them.
Okay.
There had to be. I mean, there's too many people in overseas assemblies, synagogues.
Yes.
Synagogue is actually a Greek word.
Yes.
That Paul addresses that don't accept his word and cause trouble for him.
Yes. And
now,
those had to be Jews.
Right. They don't accept the gospel and they cause him nothing but heartache.
Right.
And you know, he addresses this division amongst the Judeans that come to see Paul at the very end of the book of Acts, the last chapter of Acts, Acts chapter 28. And Paul's preaching the gospel and what happened with Christ to these Roman Judeans.
Mm-hmm.
Who came to meet him when he arrived in Rome, and it's the last, you know, things Paul says in the book of Acts is that he brings up the prophecy of Isaiah chapter, I think it's Isaiah chapter 6, you know, that your hearts would always be blinded and your eyes always hardened, or, you know, vice versa.
Yeah. And so even Paul says they can't be converted.
Right. And those what I'm saying is that those Judeans that he addressed in Rome had division amongst them,
yes.
And that's for the same reason that the Judeans that Yahshua Christ spoke to had division amongst them.
And we have the same division today, Bill.
Well, right,
we have Christian identity preaching the true gospel, and we have Judeo-Christianity making alliance with the Jews.
Absolutely.
Just as in the days of Christ, and just as Paul is finding out here in his own self.
Right, but I mean, I wrote a paper, should Christians embrace the Jews?
Yes.
Proves unequivocally we should not.
That's right. They won't be converted, and we're wasting our breath.
Absolutely.
The most we can use them for, I think, is an example of what not to do, of how we should not live. We should not emulate the Jews in any way, shape, or form.
Now to get back to your question,
yes,
it's absolutely an established fact that but under the Roman Empire, Judeans, both good ones and bad ones,
right,
had spread themselves out into all the major cities of the empire.
Yes, okay.
Every major city in the Roman Empire, including cities in Germany, in the Rhineland,
okay,
at that early time, and in Britain, at that early time,
yes,
had synagogues.
Okay.
Okay, and those synagogues, to each synagogue was attached a tavern or an inn. Well, and that was because they couldn't go to the taverns and inns of the non-Judeans.
Oh, okay.
Because of the food laws.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So all of the synagogues had a place where a Judean or somebody trying to live by the law,
uh-huh,
had a place where he could safely eat and quarter.
Yes. Yes, okay.
And that there was like a motel, a bed and breakfast business attached to every synagogue.
With a chapel attached, right.
Right, that's the way it was.
Right, okay.
And that's, you know, you could see that just from a lot of Paul's statements in the book of Acts.
The, the synagogue slash motel.
Right, because if a Judean was traveling on business,
yes,
he would get into a city,
yes,
and first, in most cities, you couldn't just stay anywhere.
Right.
You know, they all had designated areas where strangers had to stay and where strangers had to quarter.
So it's like segregation in the South.
Well, absolutely. There was all the Greek cities were segregated like that.
Yes.
And that was the custom.
Yes.
And you would stay at a designated street by the city wall where there would be a row of bed and breakfasts.
Right.
Or motels or inns or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
Whatever modern term you want to put on these ancient facilities.
Yes.
And you would be able to stay. You would pay for a room, and you would get a meal, or two.
Apartheid. How about it?
Well, right. Strangers just didn't wander through the villages in foreign lands late at night.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Right. Right.
Or probably at any other time, it didn't happen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The local authorities definitely would have put a stop to that.
Right.
It didn't happen.
Yeah.
Even in 20th century Europe, you had open cities and closed cities.
Uh huh.
And an open city was a city that anybody from any other place could go to.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But you couldn't go into any – you couldn't walk through villages in central Germany.
Right. Yeah. You were an outsider. People looked at you funny. Who's that? What's he doing here? Yeah.
Right. You were in big trouble.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so it's that old-fashioned system of life, way of life, is not that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
Not that long ago. Right, right.
Right, and Europe, even Germany until World War II, had designated open cities.
Right. Now, America, being the land of unwalled villages, I think America, after the War of 1812, disregarding perhaps the Civil War, up until 1913 or so, was probably one of the safest places to live, with the exception of the Wild West, okay, that ever existed.
Right, and the only reason why any of our cities are unsafe today is because they're integrated.
That's right. That's right.
Only one thing makes our cities unsafe: minorities.
That's right. That's right. And you look at every black-run city, it's nothing but chaos.
Absolute disgrace.
They can't administer the city. Everything goes to hell. Crime, corruption, everything, you know. But then you look at the cities that are primarily white, you know, and it's not just a matter of having money, folks. It's because they do their jobs. That's why.
Right, it's
because white people
work,
do their jobs.
Each other.
Yes. Black people just sit around, pretend to be impotent. Of course, there's some exceptions to that, and of course, we have exceptions in our white people. There are lazy white people, but the vast majority of white people that I know are hardworking individuals, and they get embarrassed. If you call a white man lazy, he gets embarrassed, and he picks up his shovel and starts digging again, you know, whereas, you know, other races don't have that work ethic that we do. They just don't
have
it.
Absolutely
not. Yeah, they just don't have it. Okay, well, I think we got three more chapters left in the book of Romans. We might be able to get through these last three in the next show. But
well,
there's
I don't know. 14, we get into the – Paul talks about the food laws and things
like
that.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. So I think maybe we two more episodes, and we'll be done with the book of Romans, and then we can decide, you know, where we want to go next. And, you know but tomorrow, my show is going to be with Patricia and a few other people involved in the anti-vaccination movement. And we're going to be talking about that on the Voice of Christian Israel. And then next Friday, we'll probably be going to Matthew chapter 10 and then Matthew chapter 13.
Yeah, the focus, I'm sure, will be on Matthew chapter 13.
Okay. So the parable of the wheat and the tares, one of the most important parables in the whole Bible. So don't miss that show next Friday. And looking forward to doing a next Saturday night show and tomorrow. So thank you again. Praise Yahweh, Bill.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.